Support for the Exchange podcast comes from you, our sustaining members, and from New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire remains one of the least racially diverse states in the country, but diversity is on the rise here. And today on The Exchange, we are reflecting on Black History Month and speaking with leaders of color around the state. We'll discuss the work they're doing in the State House and around the state, and we'll also look at where New Hampshire still lags in equality and representation. If you have questions or comments, send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Post on our Facebook page. Just search for Exchange, NHPR Exchange. It's all one word, NHPR Exchange. Or give us a call now. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. And we're hoping to hear from people of color in particular today. Share your experience. Again, give us a call. 1-800-892-6477. Joining us this hour, James McKim, president of the Manchester NAACP, Manny Content, a member of the Manchester Police Commission. He's on the advisory board for the Office of Youth Services in Manchester and PAL. He is also on the board of Bring It, which provides students with resources they may not otherwise get. Senator Melanie Levesque. She represents parts of Nashua and surrounding towns. She's the first African-American senator in New Hampshire. And Jada Hebra, senior vice president and chief diversity and inclusion officer at SNHU. Thank you, all of you, for being on the program today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. So we'll talk about a variety of issues today, education, housing, police policy, criminal justice. Before we get to these things, I want to open it up a little more broadly to get your views on Black History Month, which we mentioned in the beginning. And we'll start with you, James. Do you feel like the idea of Black History Month still serves an important purpose?
I think it does. We celebrate history in this country, and we tend to not get the full story of our history here in the United States. And so Black History Month really is an opportunity for us to learn more about our history than what we learn in school. And, you know, without that kind of focus, we wouldn't know about the history of who we are, how we've gotten to where we are, and how we might move forward in the world without making some of the mistakes of the past. So I think it's critically important.
I totally agree. I believe that there's so much to be learned about Black history. We've just started to scratch the surface. We tend to cherry pick what we discuss, what we talk about. I think when you dive a little bit deeper into the history, Black history, you're amazed at all the new things that you're going to learn. I think it's still relevant.
Senator Levick?
Yes, we are so busy living our lives that we don't stop to take the time to reflect on the past, to reflect on our history. And I always welcome Black History Month because it's a time for me to really to dig in, to buy a new book, to attend a different seminar. And I always learn something new about our history. Many times it's a very positive thing, like an inventor, rather than just about slavery and oppression. There are so many good works and so many inventors that we have. And each year I learn more. And I appreciate that. But I would also say that it's not just about February, but thanks to people like Jerry Ann Bogus and the Black Heritage Trail, that Black history is every month.
So this month is good, but it's also the other efforts made to bring history to the forefront, also very good. Jada, do you want to weigh in?
No, I agree with everything. And I have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with Black History Month because of all of, I love it because of all of the things that my colleagues just mentioned. It's like a big party, and you lift up and center Black history in this nation. So it's exciting. On the other hand, it's segregated. It's just another way that our experience is segregated. And I have an issue with that. In an ideal world, we perceive Black history as our history, and it's integrated into everything That we do in schools, as James mentioned. So it's a both and for me.
Segregated in the sense that it's pushed into just one month?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
regarding segregation, not that I totally disagree, but I noticed things like the MLK breakfast. My dream had always been that it not just be for Black people, that it be very integrated. And we see more and more that there are more and more people of different colors, more white people, different nationalities that attend these events. When I go to the Black Heritage Trail events, sometimes there are more white people than Black people. So I think that people are realizing that it is not just a Black experience, but it's our shared experience.
Mm-hmm. What about, go ahead, Manny, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to add to that. Just, we've got to come to a point where we realize that Black history is U.S. history.
Right.
It's got to get to the point where it's just part of our fiber, part of our teachings, part of what we acknowledge to our future, you know, to our kids. It's just got to be part of our normal. The Black Heritage group down in Portsmouth are doing a great job. Some of the events, I happen to be on their email list, so I get to get tidbits of it every now and then. And I think that's an important part of our history. And it shouldn't be just shared with a certain few. It should really be cascaded out there to the masses so that everybody understands that it's history. It's not just Black history.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like in schools in particular, students, young people are getting the full picture of the history? James, you're shaking your head. Not really.
They're not getting the full history. And that's why the Manchester branch is actually embarked on, and I know Manny's worked on a number of programs where we're actually teaching kids of color the rest of the story because they're not really getting that in schools and how they need to show up in the world, which they're not getting taught in schools as well. So the education system, and I know that's something we want to talk about, the education system doesn't provide what's really needed for kids of color. And I would say, again, to Manny's point, it doesn't provide white kids what they need to understand how to interact across cultures and across race.
Manny, I want to give you a chance at some point during the show today to talk about that program.
Sure.
It's really fascinating. But before we get into that, still speaking broadly, I wanted to get each of you to comment on what you think the biggest areas where New Hampshire is falling short as it's efforts to be a welcoming place for people of color. I don't know who would like to begin, but happy to open.
I'll sure. Fall on the sword. One of the things that I've been a resident of Manchester, New Hampshire for 50 years. We've come a long way. We've made a lot of progress. I remember in the late 70s, early 80s, walking down Elm Street and getting looks and getting, you know, what is he doing here type of thing. And not saying that that's completely gone, but that is not the new norm. That is unacceptable behavior. When you're around groups of people and somebody says something ignorant, I think now you get the shock where before you got the laughter. So I think we've come a long way. We're not there yet. What I would like to see is I'd like to see the opportunities for everyone to be equal. Every time I go, not every time, I shouldn't generalize, but a lot of times when I go into a McDonald's or, you know, a low-paying job, I see people of color. When I go into some of these high-paying employers, I tend to see laborers as people of color. I want to see people of color more empowered. I don't want it given to them. I want them to just have the same equal opportunities to achieve and be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see as.
Yeah, I'll speak to that. And do you want to go ahead?
You go ahead.
I was just going to say this is something that I serve on the Economic Vitality New Hampshire Commission, and I'm part of the Race and Equity series put on by the Endowment of Health. And one of the major areas of focus that we have, because we've heard stories, is around economic development and economic empowerment. So we're in the process of capturing stories of where there are barriers to going into high-wage jobs, for example, and having access to assets and resources that will allow people to achieve economic wealth. And it's critically important for our state because we know we've got an aging population and we need to attract people to the state to take up those jobs and create a vibrant economy going forward.
Senator Levesque.
I grew up in Nashua, and it was a very vibrant city when I was growing up, and it's even more so now. And I'm very proud to say that Mayor Donches has proclaimed Nashua to be a welcoming city. And I think that's very important to not just African Americans, but all the minorities that are in our state. The important things that minorities need to have is, and actually all people need to have, food on the table, shelter, a home to live in, and a good education. And one of the things that we do in the state Senate and in the House is to help ensure that all children get a quality education. So that's critical. But another thing is exposure to different types of scenarios, different ways of living, different job opportunities that may be out there. I'm very interested in robotics, for example, and I would love to see more young children be exposed to robotics, whether it's Legos or VEX programs, because that could spark an interest in them that is going to help determine their trajectory and potential job growth. And as we've all said, that economics and having jobs is critical to our success.
So how well do you think New Hampshire is doing in providing those economic opportunities?
Well, I think that we're providing them more so for people who are able to be involved in them. Not all people are able to, or children are able to, perhaps because they're from a broken home. They may not have transportation. So we're doing work, but I think that there's definitely more work that can be done.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Jada?
Yeah, I think, a couple things. I feel like we need to first address sort of this collective colorblindness in New Hampshire, that you're not supposed to talk about race, or that's somehow rude, that, you know, we're people first, and really, really acknowledge the fact that there are systems that perpetuate racism in this state, and we need to confront them. And so related to that, I think the people who have the power to take responsibility for disrupting the systems that perpetuate racism need to do more than pay lip service and set targets and goals and metrics, and then be held accountable to them.
Opportunity metrics, you think? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about what needs to happen in our schools, what needs to happen in our businesses, if we identify what the problem is, what the gaps are, then, you know, people who have the power to change policy and impact policy, who have the power to hire and set wages, need to say, okay, we want to, here's the target, here's the metric by which we're going to measure ourselves, and here's the timeline. And if we don't hit this goal by this date, there's an accountability there or an incentive. But I think it really rests with, we have to look at the system and who has the power to shift systems and hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you would be very happy to hear what Senator Levesque was saying about what Mayor Jim Donches has done in Nashua, saying Nashua is a welcoming city. That's a very good message to put out there, but also follow up with some kind of measurable, some deliverable that would change the scenario for people on the ground.
Absolutely.
I see. Listeners, this is a conversation you can join as well. If you have an experience you'd like to share as a person of color in New Hampshire, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Speaking to Jada's point, if there's a metric you would like to see governments adopt and be held accountable to, let us know what that is. 1-800-892-6477. And let's go to the phones and talk to Diane in Portsmouth. Diane, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is a very important topic, and I'm very happy to hear you discussing it. I have three very quick points to make. The first one is that Portsmouth Listens, which is an opportunity to dialogue around issues in Portsmouth next month in March, is having a community dialogue on equity and inclusion. We're asking anyone who lives, works, or plays in Portsmouth to join us and to talk about how can we be a more inclusive and equitable community. What do people who are living here think we need to do to open this up and be more welcoming to people. So we're going to be dialoguing about it, and that's at PortsmouthListens.com. The other one, or maybe it's .org, but it's one of them. Anyway, the other one is, the second one is that the Black Heritage Trail of New Hampshire has been doing a lot of work on opening up New Hampshire to understanding our history of people of color all around the state. And there are tea talks during this month, and there are conferences, and the Black Heritage Trail of New Hampshire has been doing a tremendous job with that. My third one is a comment about something that I think we could be doing. I was in New York recently, where I'm from originally, but I've lived in New Hampshire for 50 years. And I was in New York, and I was sitting in a subway car full of the most diverse people. I was probably the only white person in the car. And there was an advertisement, come to New Hampshire, welcome to New Hampshire, come visit New Hampshire. It was probably by the New Hampshire Tourism Board, I would imagine. And the people they depicted in the picture welcoming it were all white people. So if you want to invite more diverse people to visit the state, who then may think, well, this is an interesting place to consider coming to live, you've got to show more people of color in the pictures to invite people to come into the state. So our outreach to the other parts of the country, inviting people to New Hampshire, has got to show more diversity here to let people feel welcome here.
Well, Diane, thank you very much for your comment. And James McKim nodding his head. Seems like you're familiar with this advertising campaign.
I'm familiar with the campaign. And interestingly enough, I mentioned I'm part of the Economic Vitality New Hampshire Initiative. One of the things that we're working on is going out, having people of color who are in business, going out across the country and talking about how there's opportunity here for people of color in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. opportunity to get a good job, have a great way of life. And it's not just the tourism piece, it's the coming and living here piece as well.
Mm-hmm. And the opportunity for people to sort of see themselves in New Hampshire and say, oh, this is a place where there are people like me. And
yes.
Maybe I could come and I could be comfortable with that.
Right.
Along those lines, too, I wanted to ask you, Senator Levesque, I mean, you're the first African-American senator in New Hampshire, and now young people of color in New Hampshire can look at you and say, look, I can be a senator. That must be really meaningful to you.
It is very meaningful. And the way that I came upon being a legislator was by meeting somebody, a person of color. The Honorable Jackie Witherspoon is from Exeter. She came to one of our NAACP meetings, and I was very active with the original NAACP in Nashua. And when I met her, I knew that I could be more than, you know, a chair of the NAACP and do more good work. So she was my mentor, and I know that I can be the mentor for other people as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, to follow up what you're saying is I think it's important for folks like yourself and myself that have achieved positions of, I don't know if it's called power or whatever it is, to interact with the young community. Because I know when I walk into an establishment with, you know, predominantly people of color, and somebody introduces me as a Manchester police commissioner, they do one of two things and go, what? Or they laugh. Mm-hmm. Because they don't expect that. That's not what you're expecting. So we have to once again make that become the new norm, that you walk into a group and is introduced as a senator, and people clap and not go, really?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, people say really when they hear that I'm the first African-American senator.
Yes.
Like there have never been any more previously? No.
Yeah.
Why has it taken so long?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly. But I just wanted to also say that we have fourth graders that come into the Senate. Every fourth grade class comes into the Senate. And to see their eyes light up, not just children of color, but young girls and young boys, and they see what they could possibly be. They take it very, very seriously. So that is one of the ways that I'm able to reach out to people. I also like to visit the schools and go to different events like robotics. But I think it is very important to be able to see somebody, somebody of color in higher positions where they could aspire to.
And I think we also need to encourage our for-profit institutions and organizations to create welcoming communities as well and be welcoming. I mean, the senator is mentioning robotics. I used to be CIO at FIRST.
Oh, cool.
So then there is a huge push, of course, for getting kids into STEM. I'd love to see a push specifically for kids of color to get into STEM. And some organizations are actually doing that. The NAACP actually has a program around that. But if we could get businesses to put that kind of focus on bringing people of color into their organizations and creating the welcoming kind of space where people want to work at those organizations, that would go a long way to accomplishing becoming a welcoming estate.
And I imagine it's not just words you're hoping for, right? You're hoping for some kind of maybe financial commitment to assist having these kids go to programs like FIRST Robotics?
Absolutely, yeah. Because in many cases they can't afford it.
Yeah.
And the transportation issue, for example, not being able to get to the competitions and get to those programs.
Yeah, that's an important part of it. James, you took on the role as the head of the Manchester NAACP just about a month ago, was it?
That is correct.
Can you talk a little bit about your top priorities for what you'd like to accomplish?
Sure. So for us, education is pretty much our top priority. We are embarking on an effort to pull together what we're calling a Saturday school. And to Mandy's point earlier, kids of color are not, and we talked about this a bit, kids of color are not given the education that they need. They're not taught in school their history. They're not taught how to deal with the rest of the world. So we're putting together a program to actually bring kids in on Saturdays and teach them those things. So that's one of the priorities that we have for the year. In terms of criminal justice, we have a criminal justice effort to put on a criminal annulment clinics. Donna Brown is our legal redress committee chair, and she's sponsoring those. And we're starting to work with the ACLU to put on other kinds of programs, Know Your Rights kinds of efforts and initiatives to help people become educated as to their rights and what they can do to be successful. I'm really looking forward to putting an emphasis on the economy, which our branch has not really done anything with in the past. So I see myself as a convener, a connector. And so the work I'm doing with the Economic Vitality New Hampshire Initiative and the Race and Equity Series, I want to bring to the NAACP and have some programs built to support those as well.
Listeners, we're talking today with leaders in the African-American community about issues pertaining to them. And we also want to hear from you about your experience as well. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about education, diversity in education and opportunities there. And we want to know your stories as well. Your comments are certainly welcome. Again, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back.
From the seacoast to the Upper Valley, Monadnock to the Great North Woods, NHPR covers the stories that impact your community to help you stay connected to what's happening in every corner of the state. I'm Annie Ropeek, a reporter here at NHPR, and when you give $10 a month as a sustainer, you'll help support a vital resource that is statewide, regional, and deeply New Hampshire. Give today at nhpr.org.
Today, we are talking about the African-American experience in New Hampshire with James McKim, president of the Manchester NAACP. Manny Content, a member of the Manchester Police Commission. He's also on the advisory board for the Office of Youth Services in Manchester. Senator Melanie Levesque, state senator. She's representing parts of Nashua and surrounding towns. She's the first black senator in New Hampshire. And Jada Hebra, senior vice president and chief diversity and inclusion officer at SNHU. We'll talk a little bit about education in this part of the program and hone in on a few different things. We've got some calls on the line we're going to get to during this part of the program as well. I wanted to start this part with you, Jada, because you at SNHU have been working on diversity and inclusion. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what you've been doing.
Yeah, thank you. Right. First, I want to say, you know, SNHU's mission and is to be a disruptor in higher education. Higher education has historically been about excluding people of color. So We look at higher ed as a pathway to upward social mobility for those who've been marginalized and disenfranchised in the higher ed space. So my role, I came to SNHU 3 years ago. We just completed our strategic plan a year ago, and we're now in the process of implementing that plan. We have 15, you know, very ambitious objectives that we want to achieve in the next 4 years, and we're in the business of doing that right now, building a team and really building an infrastructure to get the work done. But we did, you know, we've identified, you know, how do we recruit and retain underrepresented people, both employees and learners? How do we cultivate a culture of belonging? And how do we develop our own learning and development strategy within SNHU to raise awareness of many different issues related to diversity, equity, and inclusion for our people so that we can serve our learners, our large number and growing number of learners across the nation and across the world, really, again, to address the fact that there is a widening wealth gap in this country between Black and white folks, racialized folks, that's pretty significant. And we see higher ed as a way to close that gap. And so we're thinking about what can we do at SNHU to make sure that we're getting as many people in, keeping them, graduating them, so that they can leave us with more choices and more resources and have a positive civic impact. So that's mm-hmm. what we do.
So does that involve in some way scholarships for people?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. You know, we have a goal to drive down the cost, and we've held tuition flat at SNHU for the past 10 years in the online space, and for the past 5 in on the bricks and mortar campus in Hooksett. Financial aid and need-based merit scholarships. Yeah, we're thinking a lot about access, and financial is probably the biggest barrier to higher ed is a financial barrier.
The financial part, yeah. James.
Yeah, I was just going to support that and just say that I'm working with Dennis Hill, one of the professors there, and I know that at the faculty level, there is a real recognition that diversity, equity, and inclusion needs to be built into the curriculum and into everything that's happening there. So I really commend what SNHU is doing with its efforts. And I'm seeing that I'm seeing a number of academic institutions also with that same kind of recognition and focus, which is so critical for us to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Senator Levesque, what are you seeing in Nashua schools in particular? Is there anything that's working well in Nashua? Are there things that need improvement? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, I think that we have a great deal of diversity. We speak over 67 languages, probably more like 100, and the same in Manchester. It's quite diverse as well. We have a great deal of ESL programs. I was at the Nashua High North campus just a couple weeks ago, and I was just totally blown away by the diversity that was in the schools. As far as the curriculum, I can't really speak very broadly about the curriculum. Most of my work is done at the state level. But I do know that as far as being a senator, what we're doing in the legislature is really promoting our young people, promoting that they get a quality education. We've been giving money back to our taxpayers in the form of education funding and municipal funding. But Nashua is doing good work.
Okay, thank you. And Manny, we alluded earlier to a program that you've been working on.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
A few programs, actually. Bring It, which is housed at Hillside Middle School, is a program that has, I think, about 150 after-school kids that are brought in from all over the city, bused. The city of Manchester provides us with transportation. The kids come in where they have various programs they can participate in, sports, soccer. They can get after-school help with tutoring. There's a girls' program for empowerment that is a majority of the girls are refugees. So they're being taught that you're not back where you were before. In this country, you have opportunities to be as equal as a man, and you can achieve what you want to achieve. We've got two alumni, former alumni. One is playing in the major league soccer He's a professional soccer athlete, a young man that spent most of his life in refugee camps. And when he came to the U.S., you know, he was just a gawky little kid. And now when he walks into the room, there's an aura about him because he's achieved from going from a refugee camp to now being a recognized star in the U.S. is pretty empowering. And then we have another student that won an Academy Award for songwriting, a refugee, former refugee from Manchester, that writes music for Beyonce. So when those two kids walk into our building, I get giddy because that's empowerment.
So what are the students saying about whether or not these or other programs you've heard of are working for them?
I'll tell you.
Do New Hampshire students feel like they're being supported in a way that they should be?
These programs give the kids an opportunity. Whether it works or not, it's up to the kids. But it's an opportunity that didn't exist. What pays the bills for me is Coca-Cola Northeast. I work for Coca-Cola Northeast. A couple of years ago, we started with MPAL. When the kids would graduate from the MPAL program, if they weren't going to go to college, they could apply at Coca-Cola. Right now, we have a few kids that are working for our company that are started out as laborers. I think one is a salesman now, going to college, just bought his home. He's the only member of his family that's ever gone to secondary education. So what I'm talking about is opportunities. I'm not talking about guarantees, but we need to provide more opportunities to not just people of color, people of low income, because we tend to gravitate, whether we're people of color or low income, we tend to be in that same group. And we've got to have the us and not them and us. We've got to create an atmosphere where everybody has the equal chance of succeeding.
Listeners, if you have questions or comments, give us a call. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk to Barry in Concord. Barry, thank you very much for calling.
Hello. I was calling because I have a concern about the way that a lot of our Black residents of New Hampshire are viewed. And what I'm getting at is that in the United States, what we do, and especially I've seen, especially here in New Hampshire, people look at the skin color of the person and determine their background. The reality is in New Hampshire, a large portion of our Black residents are from Africa. Many of them are from the Caribbean. Some of them are Hispanic. But yet, unlike white Europeans, who are usually young, people from European background usually, my family is Italian, or my family is German, or I came from Sweden or England. For us, we're Black, and assigned to us is a specific culture that may or may not be representative of actually the background that we have. I'm just wondering, in New Hampshire, and I think it's a little less so in the schools, but definitely walking out among the community, I've seen where people just, they're Black, and they think they know what their background is and what their lifestyle is. And I think that's something that we really have to address in New Hampshire, understanding and education of really the diversity of the entire Black diaspora.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. Really appreciate that. So, Barry, talking about sort of a simplified view of what it means to be Black in New Hampshire, getting some nods around the table here. Senator Levesque, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I mean, something I've dealt with all my life is when people generalize who you are and where you come from. And I believe that the only way around that is by getting to know people. So you put yourself in positions where you may be the only Black or African-American person in the room, but people get to know who you are. So you really have to make a concerted effort to reach out to other people that are different from you, get to know them, and then they find out that you're really the same.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let's talk to Daniel in Manchester. Daniel, thank you very much for calling. Hi, Daniel. Are you there?
Hi. Can you hear me? This is Dale.
Dale. I apologize.
No problem. And I know some of your listeners, so I just want to say thank you so much for having this segment. One of the points that I wanted to make is that there is a big gap between African-Americans who are kind of more in the middle class. They have their profession certification than African-American who are more on the from the low income end that Manny was mentioning earlier. And I do think that there's a difference in terms of the challenges that they experience. On the lower end, I get to work with communities that are more on the upcoming, and some of their challenges are still embedded into the way that the social services view them, the school districts, the options, the classes, the levels that the students are in. And a lot of those challenges they face prevents them from moving forward. And then on the middle end, I work with employers all the time that bring me in to do diversity and inclusion training and try to figure out how they can do a better job. And most of the time, African-American employees, they feel like they're stuck. You know, there's no mobility to that next promotion or that next segue into their career. So I do think that there is challenges, but it's also segmented into the different socioeconomics that they're in. And I think, you know, that there has to be some effort there in order to better understand what our experiences are in order for us to feel that New Hampshire is a place for us we can prosper.
Thank you very much, Dale. Really appreciate it. James McKim.
So this is precisely, I mentioned the Economic Vitality New Hampshire Initiative and the Race and Equity Series Initiative to look at different pathways to economic success. And so the effort is to map what those challenges are. And Dale, you're absolutely right. There are different challenges for different socioeconomical levels of people. So we want to really get an understanding of what those barriers are and figure out what programs we can promote, what policies we can put into place to help eliminate those barriers.
Mm-hmm. Along those lines, Senator Levesque, I wanted to ask you about the Poor People's Campaign. Last month, you led a panel discussion about the Poor People's Campaign, an initiative started by Dr. Martin Luther King. The project focused on the interconnection of race and poverty. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the details of that?
Sure. Well, we had about a 4 or 5 member panel talking about things like minimum wage, environmental issues, and how it affects poverty and health care. And it was very well received and kind of reminded us that we all need to be cognizant of these issues, that minimum wage is important for people to be able to just live their lives and, you know, survive paying for food and rent. And so it was a good forum, and we need to hear more about that, and we need to do more to help the Poor People's Campaign.
We get this note. It's unsigned, I believe. And the note says, I wonder if your guests can speak to a prepared curriculum for the K-5 elementary classroom that can be used across the state. I know there are resources out there, but having a centralized place featuring concrete material that utilizes primary resources to teach our young New Hampshire students about the history of people of color, specifically in our state, would be an excellent project. Oh, this person identifies as a local fourth grade teacher as well. And this person says that they are struggling every year to find this kind of material to teach, and teachers have such a limited supply of curricula, this person says. So what do you think? Maybe we'll go to you on this, Jada. Yeah. Have you put some thought into this, given that you're...
K-5, you know, K-12 is, you know, higher ed does not exist in a vacuum. We depend on K-5, K-12. So that is not necessarily my area of expertise, but I think that she's absolutely right, or he. We are developing, we don't have set curriculum for K-5, but we are developing a diversity and inclusion library of resources to be used at SNHU by SNHU employees and learners. And I can't imagine why that DI library could not be leveraged outside of SNHU for folks to access. There are some efforts. I won't be able to name them off the top of my head right now, but the New Hampshire Humanities Council is looking at funding for a second year curriculum development at the K-5 level for just exactly what she's talking about. So I think there are definitely resources, and sort of harvesting those resources and making them available to people in a centralized way, I think, is a fabulous idea.
Mm-hmm. James, you had something to say.
Yeah, and I was going to just say that for the Manchester School District, the Manchester Proud Initiative is looking at that very topic as well. Trying to have a curriculum that is more equitable, as well as teaching standards that are more equitable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Jim in Plymouth. Jim, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for having this show. It's very, very important. I wanted to piggyback on what a previous caller had mentioned about people singing someone of color and then making an assumption about who they are and where they're from. I have a son who works in a restaurant in a very touristy area, not too far from here. And he frequently gets questions from patrons wondering where he's from. And he'll say, oh, well, I'm from a couple towns over. I'm from Plymouth. And they're like, no, where are you from? So I told them finally, I said, why don't you just tell them you're from Wakanda? See what they have to say about that.
Be a, you know, kind of call them out on the implicit sort of racism behind the question. Yeah. That's a common thing, unfortunately.
Yes.
Very common.
Yes. Very common.
I'd like to share a story.
Sure.
About 20 years ago, I was a merchandiser for Coca-Cola, and they gave me this new territory, Milford, New Hampshire, right? So I got to venture out of Manchester. I got to drive all the way out to Milford, New Hampshire. I get to Milford, New Hampshire, and I go to the store that I'm supposed to service, and I walk in, and there's no people of color. There's everybody's white. So, okay, I go in. I do my work. A couple of days into it, this lady comes in, needs a hand. I reach up and get the item for her that she couldn't reach. This continued for, I don't know, 4 months, 5 months. Finally, we had a conversation. And she ended the conversation with the words, you know, you're pretty nice for a black man.
Ouch.
But after getting to know her, as ignorant as that comment was, she had not developed a relationship with anybody of color. She didn't think she was being offensive. She thought she was giving me a compliment. So I think sometimes we need to hear people out and find out, okay, what did you mean? You said the words, but what did you mean? Because we're so quick to jump on people and want to punish them when what they're trying to say is all that they know. Yeah. And I think the best part of breaking down the barriers is teaching each other, just like the Mirror Project, teaching each other how to get along, how to understand each other, how to communicate with each other. And I think that's a real big part of it all.
Importance of the question, what do you mean by that? Senator LeVake.
Yeah, I can relate to what Manny's saying because many times I have been asked that question, but I don't look at it as offensive in any way, because if they really wanted to be offensive to me, they would have called me a nasty name or they wouldn't interact with me at all. And I could not be a representative or a senator or a business owner if I'm going to second guess everybody's motive for speaking to me. So I tend to pick my battles, and I would not take offense to something like that. I may say to them, well, where are you from? You know, I think we've got to get a little thicker skin in a sense and not look at everything as a negative. Again, if they didn't like you, they wouldn't interact with you at all.
Mm-hmm. Jada.
Yeah, I think that this, again, is a symptom of a systemic issue. It's manifested in individual action. So how we respond to individuals, yes, with grace, compassion, understanding, dialogue, all of that. But if we stop there and don't really address the bigger systemic issues that prevent us from having the luxury of being seen as an individual. Mm-hmm. If you're not racialized, you have the luxury of being seen as an individual. And so until we address that bigger system that continues to perpetuate these individual acts, those individual acts will continue to happen. And we will continue to be the receivers of them, who are always in the position of having to educate and forgive and raise awareness. And I think that we should flip it. I think people who are perpetuating the system, who built the system, who designed the system, need to take more responsibility in identifying what's wrong with the system and disrupting it. But I agree. I mean, I think that people who on the day-to-day trip up, step in it, I step in it, everybody makes mistakes. But then after you make the mistake, you have to take the responsibility for figuring out why you made it and don't do it again.
Let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll talk about a few more issues. We'll get into policing, police practices here in New Hampshire, talking about race with children. Be curious to know what you all think about when it's an appropriate age to start talking with children about race. Listeners, you can weigh in on that and other questions too. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and today on the program, we are talking with four knowledgeable people about the African-American experience, and we're also talking with you. We want to know what it's like for you to be Black in one of the whitest states in the country. Give us a call. The phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange, exchange at nhpr.org. Joining us this hour, Jada Hebra, Senior Vice President and Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer at SNHU, Senator Melanie Levesque. She's a state senator representing parts of Nashua and surrounding towns. Manny Conten, a member of the Manchester Police Commission. He's also on the advisory board for the Office of Youth Services in Manchester. And James McKim, president of the Manchester NAACP. And again, with you, we hope, join the conversation by calling 1-800-892-6477. Manny, you've been serving on the Manchester Police Commission since last summer. For those who aren't familiar, what's the role of the Police Commission?
The Police Commission consists of five individuals that are nominated and then presented to the mayor, and then the mayor presents our names with our background checks and our resumes to the Board of Aldermen, and then they vote on whether to approve for us to be kind of the linkage between the Board of Aldermen and City Hall and the Police Department. We meet regularly, once a month, and the senior leadership of the Manchester Police Department. First off, we have a session where any citizen in the city of Manchester can come and talk about any issues they may have, and I encourage people to do that. And then we have a reporting session, and then we go into closed sessions where we have some conversations, sometimes, you know, uncomfortable, but we have those conversations and try to improve the Manchester Police Department.
I see. So how would you describe the relationship between the Manchester Police Department and the African-American community in Manchester?
Like I said, I grew up in Manchester for 50 years. I remember as an 18-year-old coming out of Gill Stadium and having to lay on the ground because there was a bank robbery at the Tedeschi Foods across the street. Now, mind you, I just played in a football game for the last 2.5 hours. And I'm an 18-year-old kid, but I resembled the suspect. The suspect was Black, but he was a middle-aged Black man, and I was an 18-year-old. I can tell you right now, from those experiences to the experiences that I'm hearing now, it's much improved. Like I said, we're not there. We're not 100% there. But the thing you've got to understand, and I've come to understand since I've been around the Manchester Police Department, is their leadership is high integrity, full transparency. And now there's people that are willing to listen and have a conversation with you, no matter how hard the conversation is. And we've had some hard ones. They'll sit, we'll talk, we'll listen. We may agree, we may choose to not agree. But you have to have those conversations.
So you said you're not at 100% yet. What do you think it'll take to get there or get closer to it?
I think we can do more with reflecting our community. That is a work in progress. I've seen that the hiring the last, 6-7 months has been very diverse, which I'm very proud of the department on. Once again, it's getting people that look like me to want to be part of the MPD, and sometimes that's hard.
Mm-hmm. James, what are you hearing on the issue of police and community relations in Manchester?
I know that there are Manchester. So I was thinking statewide too, but from Manchester, I'm kind of new to the Manchester kind of political scene. So I'm going to kind of defer to what Manny's saying. I will support, though, that the leadership in the police department has been, over the last few years, very transparent and really trying to improve. I was going to say, at the state level, I met with Commissioner Bobby Quinn last week, and he has the exact same concerns, and he, for the state police department, is trying to be transparent and improve his department as well. So I'm hearing the desire to improve.
Manny?
I just want to add something to that. Sure. There was an incident that happened about 3 weeks ago in the city of Manchester at the Elmwood Gardens housing community, where an 18-year-old man. He's a man now. The three police officers responded to a domestic where he was assaulting his family, and the neighbors had had enough and called. The three officers went to the house. He was barricaded in his bedroom. He would not come out. They entered the bedroom. He was laying in the bed under some sheets. They obviously did everything by the book, told him to, show us your hands, show us your hands. The gentleman refused. They tased him. They went by the book procedure, tried to get the handcuffs on him. He ended up stabbing three of them, almost killing three police officers. They went to the hospital. He was put in cuffs, put in a paddy wagon, brought to jail. There were a lot of communities where he wouldn't have made it out of that bed. And now with the city of Manchester having body cameras, this transparency all the way around. So you can go back and review that incident. And people tend to jump on either side, but the pictures don't lie. You know you saw what you saw. And I commend those police officers. And that's what I'm talking about, full transparency and the leadership. It's because of them and how they're sending the message across that we're going to do things the right way.
So body cameras, transparency, good developments in your view.
Yep.
Listeners, give us a call. We still have some time if you'd like to make a comment. 1-800-892-6477. We get an email from Diane who said, I've been listening to most of the program and have not heard anyone mention the Teaching Tolerance Project from the Southern Poverty Law Center. It addresses educational programs, issues at all age levels with tools for classroom applications. Diane, thank you very much for telling us about that. Let's talk to Christelle in Portsmouth. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Christelle. Thank you very much. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you so much. And yes, that is right.
Okay.
So I'm calling from Portsmouth. I just want to thank you first for this segment, because diversity and inclusion is so important for our state of New Hampshire. So my question is this. As a young professional, woman of color, I'm used to being in the room and not seeing anyone who looks like me to aspire to. But I want to change that. I want to find ways to mentor kids of color on the Seacoast area and other kids in low-income community. But it's a very daunting endeavor. So I just want some guidance on where I can find the resources or other channels where I should be plugged into to make this happen. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for the call. Manny Content.
Hi. Some of the advice I give folks is, believe it or not, go to your places of worship. That's where you tend to find a lot of diversity now. The beauty about diversity and people of color and people of different nationalities and backgrounds is they tend to gravitate towards their faith. And when I attend those facilities, I find people that are of color that are professionals. I tend to lean on them and ask them to come and mentor in our different communities and be a face that these kids can recognize and look up to. It's pretty hard when you live in a state where it's predominantly white to have role models that look like you. So you've got to go out and you've got to find those role models and put them in the forefront and ask them if they would please help carry the heavy load of representing people that look like them.
Senator Levick.
There's some other places that you may want to touch base with are the Boys and Girls Club, Girls Inc., and the YWMCA. And I just want to say, Crystal, I don't know if I said that right. Christelle, thank you so much for wanting to be a mentor. It is so important. And I know that you will be one of those drivers in New Hampshire.
Jada, I want to end the show with a response from you to this question. If you could really quickly, because you were talking about systemic changes and how important systemic changes are to this whole broader issue. What needs to happen over the next 5-10 years systemically that will make really move the needle on this on these issues of equality and diversity and inclusion?
It made me think of it when you were talking about law enforcement, because I do think it's leadership and awareness and through training and workshops, raising awareness of what the system actually is, because when you're in the system, you really don't see it until someone points it out. So I think leadership is really critical. You know, when you talk about the cops did everything by the book, what's the book? You know, who wrote that book? And I think leadership can take a look at that and say, well, what is in this book and what's not in this book, that, and how can we make our programs, policies, and practices as inclusive as possible? I think it takes leadership and it takes accountability. And I think people who have the power and they know who they are need to raise their own awareness about the system and what they can do to change it.
Well, we could easily stay here for another hour and discuss this, but we have to leave it there. But I want to thank you all for being on the program and engaging in this conversation with me. Really appreciate it. Jada Hebra, Senior Vice President and Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer at SNHU. Senator Melanie Levesque, representing parts of Nashua and surrounding towns. Manny Content, member of the Manchester Police Commission. He's on the advisory board for the Office of Youth Services in Manchester as well. And James McKim, President of the Manchester NAACP. Thank you all very much for being
here.
Thank you.
And remember, the conversation continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. The show's producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Michael Brindley is our program manager, and our theme music is composed by Bob Lord. The engineer is Dan Colgan. I'm Peter Biello, in for Laura Kanoi, who will be back next week. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.